Kitnior goes into conversation and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
You know, Lionel, you know something, Lionel, it's no fun getting old.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly all our old friends are dead now, but William Green is the one I miss most.
Oh, William?
Yeah.
Why old William?
Because I married his widow. Man, drink makes you look extraordinarily beautiful and sexy. Girl, I haven't been drinking. Man, no, but I have. A railway porter told a man off for smoking in the station waiting room. Don't you see that notice on the wall? It says no smoking allowed. The man said, yes, I see it, but I can't keep all your rules. I mean, there's one on this wall saying wear laminated corsets. It's my husband, Doctor. He's convinced that he's a chicken.
Oh, good heavens, madam. Why on earth didn't you bring him to see me before?
Well, we need the eggs, you see. One crook was chatting with another about making fast getaways from jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Getaway Gerald?
Yeah.
Why do you paint your car green on one side and yellow on the other?
Because I like to hear the witnesses contradict each other. One goldfish said to another goldfish, do you believe in God? And the other one said, of course I do. Who do you think changes our water? You know something, Mr. Smith? We've been standing here half an hour already, and you haven't asked me yet how's business.
I'm so sorry. How's business?
Don't ask. In this Trappist monastery, they have a rule where each monk is allowed to speak but once every 5 years. Brother Ignatius, his time came after 5 years, went and saw the Father Abbot, and the Father Abbot said, brother, your turn to speak. And he said, Father, there's a bit of a draft in my cell. Another 5 years went by, he was called up again before the Father Abbot. Your turn to speak, brother. He said, the porridge is a bit lumpy, Father. Another 5 years went by, 15 years. Your turn to speak, brother. The palliasse in my cell is a little bit sort of lumpy and hard. 20 years, another 5 years. At the end of 20 years, Brother Ignatius walked into the Father Abbot and said, I've decided to resign. The Father Abbot said, I'm not surprised. You've been doing nothing but complain since you've been here.
To include conversation in a series of programs on the arts may sound a bit like cheating, but in its highest form, conversation is an art. The trouble is that in the past it was a difficult art form to preserve. There's always something slightly dull about reported speech, and no amount of books of table talk can recapture the life of genuine conversation. And it's the same even now that there are sophisticated recording methods to preserve conversation. At its best, it's a live, spontaneous art, and ideally a participant one. And for centuries, its worth has been recognized. Let's go back to Cicero.
I'm very thankful to old age, which has increased my eager desire for conversation.
The Reverend Sidney Smith.
One of the greatest pleasures of life is conversation.
And there's an old proverb that neatly sums up its real value.
Education begins a gentleman. Conversation completes him.
Unfortunately, not all conversation is so beneficial. It can have drawbacks. Here's a definition from Ambrose Bierce.
Conversation, a fair for the display of the minor mental commodities, each exhibitor being too intent upon the arrangement of his own wares to observe those of his neighbor.
A complaint from Don Herald.
Conversation is the slowest form of human communication.
And an anonymous quip on the subject.
Conversation is the form of communication in which some men never stop to think, and many women never think to stop.
A conversation isn't just another word for talking. It's an interchange of ideas, something created mutually by the participants. George Bernard Shaw makes this distinction rather well in a description of one of his characters.
The trouble with her is that she lacks the power of conversation, but not the power of speech.
But with conversation, as with other arts, there is a great variety in what different people like. H.L. Mencken.
Women have simple tastes. They can get pleasure out of the conversation of children in arms and men in love.
Men in love are meant to talk in sweet nothings.
But they are... Sweet nothings aren't
things that come naturally to everyone. Like all forms of conversation, they have to be learned.
I can't think of anything to say.
Oh, Ron, knowing what to say is the easiest part. There's hundreds of acceptable phrases. Excuse me, but do you come here often?
I live here, Dad.
Ron, I know where you live. I ought to know that. I'm explaining the technique to you. Technique. I mean, you might say, for example, can I get you a still lemon? Or, I find the company in here rather boring. Let's take a stroll in the shrubbery. You get it, Ron?
No, Dad.
I can't remember. It's important that you get over this shyness, Ron. I don't like it. How do you expect to get married and have children if you won't go near a girl?
I'll think of something.
No, Ron. It's my duty as a father to get you started. And what's more, I believe I know how. This pink, fluffy Angora berry might be fate knocking at your door. You know why?
Because of the pom-pom?
No, because a girl who goes to the cinema by herself is obviously unattached. And if she takes her hat off in the pictures, it either shows that she's not only considerate of others, but also that she's not bald. Now, either way, she sounds a good spec for you. Ron, give me my bowler over.
What's your bowler over, Dad?
Ron, give me over my bowler.
At. Over.
I'm going back to that cinema. This girl's bound to have left her name and address there as soon as she found out her hat was missing. If I can get you and her meeting each other, Ron, boy, our troubles are over.
But, Dad.
I'll go out the back door. It's quicker.
But, Dad. Dad, come back. I don't want to meet any girl. Oh, please, Dad. Oh, thank goodness he heard me.
Good evening. Are you the gentleman in the cinema to whom I sat next?
It's a girl.
Go away. I'm all alone.
It's about your cap.
My cap?
You left your cap under the seat when you went. I saw your address inside, so I took the liberty of bringing it round.
Ah.
I do hope you were up.
Up what?
I have got you out of bed, I mean.
Ah. Did you say I was the one who was sitting next to you?
Yes.
Then you must be the one who was sitting next to me.
Well, yes, that's right.
My dad wants to talk to you. You'd better come in.
Come in? Well, I am rather soaked. Perhaps I'd better just dry off a bit. Thank you.
The parlour's through here.
Was your dad the stout gentleman who kept blowing down his orange aid straw during the love scene?
Yes.
He must be awfully good company. Shall I sit on the sofa?
If you like.
Thank you.
Excuse me, but do you come here often?
Come where?
I don't know. Dad didn't tell me what.
Dick Bentley, June Whitfield, Jimmy Edwards from the Glums. Wonder what became of the writers. For the novice conversationalist, there are books available with advice on how to dazzle your friends, be a hit at dinner parties. There are also books of useful phrases, jokes and anecdotes which will make you socially indispensable. But beware of these. In the words of Jean de la Bruyère,
one of the signs of mediocrity of mind is the habit of always telling stories.
The business of producing books to teach conversation is much more developed in the foreign language phrasebook industry. Here the innocent reader is given advice on suitable conversation for almost any situation, and so long as he sticks to a few phrases, can pass himself off as a native in the country of his choice. Well, that's the theory of it. In practice, the conversation offered by phrase books tends to sound a little unnatural and stilted. Let's hear some examples now from a very famous phrase book indeed, The New Guide of the Conversation in Portuguese and English, written by Pedro Carolino in 1855. Undaunted by the fact that he knew no English, Senor Carolino compiled his guide with two works of reference, a Portuguese-French phrase book and a French-English dictionary, and he was home and dry. All that may help to explain what now follows. Let us start, Alfred and I, where the English always start, the weather. We shall have a fine weather today.
There is some foggy.
I fear of the thunderbolt.
The sun rise on.
The sun lie down.
It is light moons.
Having mastered that simple exercise, let's be a bit more ambitious and try English as she spoke for the walk.
Will you and take a walk with me?
Wait for that the warm be out.
Go through the meadow. Who, the country is beautiful. Who, the trees are thick.
Take the bloom's perfume.
It seems me that the corn does push already.
You hear the birds gurgling.
What pleasure, which charm.
The field has by me 1,000 charms.
Are you hunter? Will you go to the hunting in one day this week?
Willingly. I have not a most pleasure in the world. There is some game on the cantons.
We have done a great walk.
But of course there's more to conversation than just smooth talk like that. As I said before, conversation is an interchange of ideas, and disagreement is sometimes valuable in maintaining the flow. Benjamin Disraeli.
If every man was straightforward in his opinions, there would be no conversation.
Mark Twain.
Agreeing with a person cripples controversy and ought not to be allowed.
It's for these reasons that arguments are often an essential part of conversation.
I'd like to have an argument, please.
Certainly, sir. Have you been here before?
No, I haven't. This is my first time.
I see. Well, do you want to have just one argument, or were you thinking of taking a course?
Well, what is the cost?
Well, it's £1 for a 5-minute argument, but only £8 for a course of 10.
Well, I think it would be best if I perhaps started off with just the one and then see how it goes.
Fine. Well, I'll see who's free at the moment. Mr. DeBakey's free, but he's a little bit conciliatory. Ah, yes. Try Mr. Barnard, room 12.
Thank you.
Come in.
Is this the right room for an argument?
I told you once.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have.
When?
Just now.
No, you didn't.
I did.
Didn't.
I'm telling you, I did.
You did not.
Oh, I'm sorry, just one moment. Is this a 5-minute argument or the full half hour?
Oh, just the 5 minutes.
Ah, thank you. Anyway, I did.
You most certainly did not.
Look, let's get this thing clear. I quite definitely told you.
No, you did not.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
You didn't.
Did.
Well, look, this isn't an argument.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. It's just contradiction.
No, it isn't.
It is.
It is not.
Look, you just contradicted me.
I did not.
Oh, you did.
No.
You did just then.
Nonsense.
Oh, look, this is futile.
No, it isn't.
I came here for a good argument.
No, you didn't. No, you came here for an argument.
Well, an argument isn't just contradiction.
Can be?
No, it can't. An argument is a connected series of statements intended to establish a proposition.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is. It's not just contradiction.
Look, if I argue with you, I must take up a contrary position.
Yes, but that's not just saying no, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. Argument is an intellectual process. Contradiction is just the automatic gainsaying of any statement the other person makes.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
Not at all.
Now, look.
Good morning.
What?
That's it. Good morning.
I was just getting interested.
Sorry, 5 minutes is up.
That was never 5 minutes.
I'm afraid it was.
It wasn't.
I'm sorry, but I'm not allowed to argue anymore.
What?
If you want me to go on arguing, I'll have to pay for another 5 minutes.
Yes, but that was never 5 minutes just now. Oh, come on. Look, this is ridiculous.
I'm sorry, but I'm not allowed to argue unless you've paid.
Oh, all right.
Thank you.
Well?
Where was it?
That wasn't really 5 minutes just now.
I told you, I'm not allowed to argue unless you've paid.
I just paid.
No, you didn't.
I did.
No, you
didn't. What are you arguing about?
You didn't pay.
Aha. If I didn't pay, why are you arguing? I've got you.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have. If you're arguing, I must have paid.
Not necessarily. I could be arguing in my spare time.
Oh, thank you. Oh, shut up.
The Monty Python team. One piece of advice that has always been given to the would-be conversationalist is that he should weigh and consider what he's about to say. An epigram from Matthew Prior.
They never taste who always drink. They always talk who never think.
You see, forethought is essential. There was once a girls' school headmistress who used to tell her charges to ask themselves three questions before they said anything. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? That seems the way to destroy conversation completely. But it's possibly a step in the right direction. The important question is, have you got anything worth saying? An epigram from Richard Garnett.
I hardly ever open my lips, one cries. Simonides, what think you of my rule? If you're a fool, I think you're very wise. If you are wise, I think you're a fool.
Conversation aspires to wit, as I suppose is the goal, but is not often achieved. Wit is a rare commodity. Alexander Pope.
You beat your pate and fancy wit will come. Knock as you please, there's nobody at home.
Jean de la Bruyère.
It is a great misfortune neither to have enough wit to talk well, nor enough judgment to be silent.
Jonathan Swift.
There are few wild beasts more to be dreaded than a talking man having nothing to say.
Another quality of wit is that it must be original. Second-hand remarks don't count. A little verse by Justin Richardson on a supposed wit.
His epigrams are not his own. The man's an epigramophone.
Conversation, in spite of all its good qualities, is only the surface of thought. And often what one says is some way removed from what one actually thinks. This is particularly true in a social context, where a polite exterior must be maintained at all costs. Mr. Alfred Marx will now warm your heart with a recitation of a poem by Thomas Hood, Domestic Asides, or Truth in Parenthesis.
I really take it very kind, this visit, Mrs. Skinner. I've not seen you such an age. The wretch has come to dinner. Your daughters, too, what loves of girls, what heads for painters' easels. Come here and kiss the infant dears, and give it perhaps the measles. What little Clara left at home, well, now I call that shabby. I should have loved to kiss her so, a flabby, dabby, babby. And Mr. S., I hope he's well, though he lives so handy. He never now drops in to sup. The better for our brandy. Come, take a seat. I long to hear about Matilda's marriage. You're come, of course, to spend the day. Thank heaven I hear the carriage. What, must you go? Next time I hope you'll give me a longer measure. Nay, I'll see you down the stairs with most uncommon pleasure. Goodbye, goodbye. Remember all, next time you'll take your dinners. Now, David, mind, I'm not at home in future to the Skinners.
The other extreme from not daring to say what you really think is not being able to think of anything at all to say. This always seems to happen in certain awkward situations when you have to make conversation, like at hospital visiting times.
Well, do we have to keep talking about my health? Can't we talk about something else? You're supposed to have lots to talk about when you visit somebody in hospital.
All right.
What do you want to talk about? Tell me the news. What's been happening?
Oh, the news. Oh, yeah. What's been happening? Nothing much at all.
Well, there must be something to talk about.
Think.
Think, have a think. What's been happening outside?
Well, let's see.
Don't keep tapping my locker.
Hey, oh, I'm sorry.
Want a fag?
You can't smoke in here.
Oh, blimey, that's going to be charming, that is.
Not on bonbon.
Here, guess who I saw yesterday?
Who?
What's his name? Oh, you know. The fellow who used to live round the corner. What's his name? Oh, you know him.
Ginger Williams.
No, not him. The other one.
Oh, I remember the tall bloke with the dark hair who used to go out with a bird from across the...
No, not him. What's his name again?
Not that funny bloke who used to live with his mother.
No, more recent than him. You know him. What's his name?
Well, describe him to me.
Well, shortish, fairish, medium build, oldish. Well, he looks younger than that, though. Nice fella. Well, you know him. Oh, what's his name? His brother went out with that girl. What's her name? Oh, you know her.
Hilda.
No, the other one. The little girl who lives down the high street.
Ethel.
No, that's the one that got married. No, I mean the other one. What's her name? Well, anyway, I saw him yesterday.
How was he?
Well, just the same. He never changes, does he?
Doesn't he?
Well, you know him better than I do.
Do I?
Well, what about him? Oh, nothing. I just saw him, that's all.
Oh, go home.
It's been warm, hasn't it?
Oh, yes, very warm. Yes, I should say so, yes. By Jove, yes, it's been warm, all right. My word, yes, indeedy, yes.
Oh, I expect you'd notice it laying there.
I have, yes. My goodness me, I have. Yes, indeed, very warm it's been. By Jove, yes. Yes, it's arid, I should say. Yeah. It'll rain, do the garden good, I shouldn't be surprised. The old... Oh, it's warm. Yes, get the old sprinkler and that. Quite warm, I should say so. Oh, yes.
Well, it's not so bad when it's cold, because when it's cold, you can always get warm. But when you're warm, it's very difficult to get cool, isn't it?
You're right there, yes. I hadn't thought of that. You're very observant. Yes, it's very difficult to get cool when you're warm. And it's been warm, isn't it? My goodness.
Tony Hancock, Sid James and Bill Kerr. I suppose the worst thing to be in conversation is a bore. But it's an accusation that's been levelled at some very eminent men, particularly those given to dogmatic pontification. Here's the Reverend Sidney Smith on Macaulay.
He's like a book in breeches.
And again.
He has occasional flashes of silence that make his conversation perfectly delightful.
Here's Dr. Johnson discussing Oliver Goldsmith.
The misfortune of Goldsmith in conversation is this. He goes on without knowing how to get off.
One of the chief causes of boring talking is not listening. If the talker is only thinking of himself, you don't get the give and take of true conversation. Ed Howe.
No man would listen to your talk if he didn't know it was his turn next.
Joyce Carey.
He's an artist, you know, and talks a great deal for his own pleasure.
And a little poem by H.A.C. Evans entitled The Egoist.
Himself is all he'll talk about to you, a subject that for him has never cloyed, thus furnishing an unimpeded view into a vast reverberating void.
Some people's conversation is mesmeric and relentless. They just never stop. Sidney Smith used to judge talk on a scale like horsepower, which he called parson power. He'd speak of a 12 parson power conversation. Nowadays we call it revs per minute. But we've all come across people who just won't stop. Mark Twain knew one.
His tongue is in constant motion from 11 in the forenoon to 4 in the afternoon. And why it does not wear out is the affair of Providence, not mine.
Well, I've enumerated some of the pitfalls of conversation, but with application and perseverance, one can avoid them. And in time, even be in a position to tackle a really difficult conversation. Like, say, returning a gift to the shop where it was bought.
Do you have a... You have a private room of some kind. I'd like to discuss returning the Christmas gift. No, it's not underwear or anything like that. See, my wife bought me a toupee, and I'd like to return it. It's under the hat, yeah. I don't know what model it is. No, it's the crew cut with the widow's peak. Yeah. Mr. Wonderful, is that, well, whatever you call it. And anyway, I'd like to return this thing. I'll show it to you in just a minute. There's some people coming. Don't stare at me. Just look around. Just wait till they go by, listen. And they by now? See, there it is. And, the problem is, I notice people pass me on the street and they start laughing, you know, after they've gone by. And it makes me look years younger, I know, but they still laugh, see. And we went to this party, see, around Christmas time, and I bent down to put some cheese dip on a cracker. And it fell, you know, the toupee fell into the cheese dip, you know. And everybody stopped having cheese dip. And the hostess, you know, she started crying and everything. And so we spent a couple hours trying to fish it out of the cheese dip. And I took it home and I put it in the washer dryer, you know. We have that's another problem. We have one of those windows, you know, and the kids like to sit and watch it, you know. And now they're mad at me because I'm returning it. You know? No, I don't want the full exchange. I like to get a real cheap one, you know, just to put in the washer for the kids. Well, no, see, I didn't know my wife was getting it for me. Looking back, you know, one morning she came in with a piece of paper and she had me put my head on it and she traced it. She never told me why she did it, you know. The main complaint is that it doesn't do, you know, what you say it's going to do. See, I understand it makes me look years younger, yeah. But see, yeah, I know it stays on a hurricane. See, but, see, we're from Iowa, and we really don't get that many hurricanes, you know. Mainly, I want it to stay on when I go down for the cheese dip. You know? The price tag. You'd have to have the price tag before you could give me a return. Can I use your phone a minute? Yeah. You want to take care of these other people? You want to call the Hennessy's, ask them to look in the bottom of the dish, see if there's a price tag in there.
Bob Newhart. And now we must draw this conversation to a close. But just in case there are any of you listening who do find talking a problem, here's a useful hint from Ralph Waldo Emerson.
A man of no conversation should smoke.
On the other hand, some talkers I know should carry a government health warning. On that note, we'll leave you. Next week, we'll be looking at the men who look at art and going into criticism. Until then, from me and Alfred, goodbye. Goodbye, Alfred. Goodbye, Alfred.
I'm not talking to you.
Frank Muir Goes Into Conversation was produced by Simon Brett and John Davis.